Mark tells us immediately before this passage in his gospel that the reason that the scribe comes forward and proposes this question to Jesus is because he's been seeing how Jesus has been dealing with the Pharisees, the Herodians, and the Sadducees, who are asking him about paying the temple tax to Caesar and then about resurrection of the dead. And Jesus is answering them all in a more profound way than any of them ever could have expected. And so as he sees him going back and forth with these Jewish leaders, he then comes to Jesus and poses his own question. Although here, this scribe, we can presume, is really asking out of a sense of earnestness, not out of a sense of hypocrisy or not trying to trip Jesus up as the other Jewish leaders were. He really wants to know Jesus' opinion, and he sees that Jesus is well-versed in the law and in the commandments, and so he wants to know what is the first of all the commandments. Is another way of asking what is the greatest of all the commandments. And for the Jews at this time, according to rabbinical tradition, there were over 600 different laws or commandments that the Jews had to follow. And so there were different arguments and debates about, okay, which one is the most important, or are there other ways in which we can organize the commandments so maybe they're easier to follow, or other ways of understanding the law. And so he poses this question of the day to Jesus. And Jesus replies with something that would have been very, very familiar to the scribe. It is called the Shema, which is just the Hebrew word for hear, to hear, because that is the way in which this passage from Deuteronomy, which we heard in our first reading, that Jesus repeats. It starts out, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is Lord alone. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength." And Jesus is saying that this prayer sums up everything that is in the rest of the commandments. And so he's not really giving any new information, so to speak, to this scribe, but really more of a deeper understanding of what this means. And actually, it's very interesting to note that Jesus adds something to the original prayer. So the original prayer in Deuteronomy is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all of your strength. Jesus adds, and with all your mind. So what does that look like for us, my brothers and sisters, to love the Lord our God with all of our mind, all of our strength, and our heart and soul? Well, first and foremost, right, with our mind. How do we love God with our mind? Well, we allow ourselves to be formed by Jesus' teaching. What he says in the Gospels, by what the church has said to us on different issues, whether they're moral issues or things about our faith, do we allow our minds to be formed, right? So that I am thinking as Jesus thinks. I'm thinking with the values of God and not the values of a culture, not the values of the world, not the values of my own opinions. And all those things have very, very strong pulls on us. But to love God with all of our mind means that we put our intellect at his service. God gave us a mind, he gave us reason, and he expects us to use it. He expects us to use it in conformity with his will. There can be a temptation to leave off learning or studying about our faith and say, well, that was something for when I was a child, or after I got confirmed, I graduated from having to learn about my faith. No, our faith, our whole life is supposed to be a lifelong learning more and more, and going deeper and deeper into our faith, understanding more about what God has revealed to us, what he expects of us, the kind of love that he has for us, and that kind of love that he wants us to extend to others. So a good question or challenge for ourselves there would be, when was the last time I learned something about my faith? Or if I'm confused about a particular teaching or issue in the church or of my faith, do I go looking and searching and trying to find the answer? Do I take advantage of my pastors or the priests? Do I take advantage of reading through the catechism? Perhaps one excuse that Catholics in earlier centuries may have had is that the information wasn't necessarily readily available, especially if we didn't know how to read, but that is not an excuse that our generation has, especially with the advent of the internet. Pretty much everything the popes have written is available online. The catechism is available. The church has made it very, very clear what she teaches on different issues of faith and morals. If we are ignorant of those, or if we don't understand those, or if we don't know what the teaching is, then we have only ourselves to blame if we haven't taken the time to find out, or if we really are confused, if we need to ask someone else that understands. And we have that responsibility to form our minds with the mind of the church. Secondly, we have to love God with all of our strength, closely related with forming our minds with Christ. After we understand what God expects of us, do we then do it? Do we then act out of that, and then do we live out of that knowledge? Does our knowledge of God's laws actually impact the way we live? Just one practical way in which we can all do this that we'll have an opportunity, at least those of us of a certain age, is this Tuesday at the elections, right, to vote. We are very blessed in our country that we actually have a say in our government and how it is run and the people that represent us there. And it's something that's a responsibility that we have to take seriously. I can't remember if I've preached at this Mass before, but I know I've said it in the course of my time here. But I've said before in my preaching that it was important for us not to get too worried or too stressed out about the things in the world that we have very little to no control over. Again, especially people that are in power, whether it's presidents, senators, congressmen, or other things, right? We are faithful to Christ. We do what we can do. But then there's a certain level where we have to surrender that into the hands of God. And those people that have been entrusted with more power and authority, whether in the church or in the world, they'll be responsible to God for that. They'll have to answer to God for that power that he has given to them. But we do have to do what we are able to do and what our responsibility has. So in terms of voting, we have the responsibility to vote. That is something that we can do, and we have a responsibility before God to do, because it has a deep effect on our culture and in our nation. Again, when I go to vote, do I simply vote my own preferences or their political party that I happen to like? Or do I vote with the mind of the church, with the mind of God? We just finished up the 40 Days for Life campaign here in Jackson, and that is really the most serious challenge that our country faces. Right, there's other issues, taxes, immigration, a variety of other issues, but really the fact that abortion is still permitted and allowed in this country, the fact that millions of children are never even allowed the opportunity to exist, to be born, that is a great, it is a great tragedy, it is a great crime in the eyes of God. All of the other rights that we enjoy in this country or other people enjoy in their countries are nothing if we don't have the right to life first and foremost. God has made it very, very clear that he is a God of life, and we are called to be a people of life as well. In fact, God reserves some of his harshest condemnations in the Old Testament, especially through the prophets and through the wisdom literature, for those that either kill the innocent or those that stand by idly while their neighbor's life is at stake and do nothing. There's a particularly powerful passage in the book of Proverbs in chapter 24 where the Lord, speaking through the sacred author, says, "Did you fail in a day of adversity? Did your strength fall short? Did you fail to rescue those who are being dragged off to death, those tottering, those nearer death, because you said, 'We didn't know about it'? Surely the searcher of hearts knows and will repay all according to their deeds." God has revealed very, very clearly to us that the killing of the innocent is something that is an abomination in his eyes and cannot be tolerated. And this is something that outweighs and must be given much more weight. And again, like I said, any other particular issue. And if we're wondering again how that practically works itself out, when we go to the polls, and again, the church isn't interested in voting for a particular party or a particular candidate, it is more concerned with the issues at hand. And so really, my brothers and sisters, what we should do is, as we go to the polls to vote, is simply have this in our mind, right? That if there is any particular politician or particular party, whatever the case might be, that supports this kind of evil, they should simply be disqualified from our vote. It is wrong for us as Catholics to vote in such a way to advance or encourage this kind of evil. But again, that is thinking with the mind of Christ and not with our own opinions or our own thoughts. And that can be difficult, it can be challenging, but it is what we are called to do as Catholics. St. Augustine, one of our great saints in the church, said that if you believe what you like in the Gospels and reject what you don't like, it is not the Gospel you believe, but yourself. And it's that temptation to have the trappings of Catholicism or the trappings of Christianity without me actually having to do anything about it. And so I'm willing to love God in that way with all of my mind and my strength so that, yeah, it actually costs me something to follow him. Finally, loving God with all of our heart and with all of our soul. These two are very intimately related together. The Catechism of the Catholic Church says that the heart is the dwelling place where I am. According to the Semitic or biblical expression, the heart is the place to which I withdraw. The heart is our hidden center, beyond the grasp of our reason. Only the Spirit of God can fathom the human heart and know it fully. The heart is the place of decision, deeper than our psychic drives. It is the place of truth, where we choose life or death. So fundamentally, to love God with all of my heart, and this is something, again, that only we and God can know. Fundamentally, this is a point of decision for each one of us. Do I want God? That is the fundamental, most basic question. Do I want God more than anything else in life? That is what will tell us whether our heart is truly with the Lord or if it is with something else. Again, because there are many, many things in our world that draw our hearts towards things that are other than God. Saint Basil, another great saint of the church, said that humans naturally desire beauty, but the good is properly beautiful and lovable. Now God is good, and all things desire good. Therefore, all things desire God. And so do I have that understanding that any goodness, anything that I'm attracted to in this world, and it could be something as simple as enjoying a movie, enjoying going out to dinner, companionship with my spouse or companionship with friends, whatever it might be, that all those good things are a mere reflection of the ultimate goodness of God. That God contains all of those good things in their perfect form, and if I truly want to be happy, then I need to love him with all of my heart and all of my soul. I have to fundamentally make that decision and orient my life around him. Again, not around anything else. My brothers and sisters, the beautiful thing about this is that when we do that, we get to experience that peace and that joy and that sense of purpose that only God can give to us. St. Augustine again once said that to fall in love with God is the greatest romance, to seek him the greatest adventure, and to find him the greatest human achievement. You see that expressed at the end of our episode here with Jesus and the scribe, as after the scribe says that, well said, teacher, and essentially repeats Jesus' answer back to him, Jesus confirms that really, in one sense, the heart of the scribe. As Mark tells us that when Jesus saw that he answered with understanding, he said to him, "You are not far from the kingdom of God." Brothers and sisters, may that be said about each one of us who are gathered here today.